Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always. But you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network Patreon's easy. All you have to do is go to ESOpodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 151 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 48, Batman number 71, Justice League number 24, Naomi number 5, Superman number 11, Supergirl season 4 episode 22, The Quest for Peace, Legends of Tomorrow season 4 episode 16, Hey World, and Doom Patrol season 1 episode 15, Ezekiel Patrol. But before we talk about that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC has confirmed Tom King's upcoming departure from the core Batman title, but revealed that his Dark Knight stories will continue in a 12-issue Batman Catwoman series drawn by Clay Mann that is scheduled to debut January 2020. December's Batman 85 will be Tom King's final issue of the title. However, DC has not revealed who will be taking his place for number 86 and beyond. The one thing that DC does emphasize is that Batman will revert from its twice monthly shipping back to its monthly schedule in January. And also, DC has confirmed that Joelle Jones's Catwoman series will continue along with King's Batman Catwoman title, so that one's not ending.
I feel like this suggests that King was not the issue, as some people suspected, because why would you give him a 12-issue miniseries? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm happy that the Batman title's going back monthly, especially since they're adding a Batman Catwoman title, because, you know, that just gets to be too much. Plus, I think they just need to key back the Batman title and even all the twice monthly titles. They just need to slow down a little bit. And I'm sure you agree with that.
There should be absolutely no twice monthly titles, in my opinion. There shouldn't be any. It's a short-term benefit that in the long run is going to ultimately chase away your readers. You're going to get temporary boost in sales, which is what I'm sure DC got from the start of Rebirth and all of the extra titles that they were churning out. But look at all of the titles that have slowly dropped back to monthly. Like, they are hurting themselves long term. This is exactly what we talked about, what was going to happen. It's just, but I mean, you can scream at the heavens all you want. They're just going to keep, they and Marvel keep doing the same thing over and over, which is foregoing smart long-term solutions in favor of just another short boost.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
It would be probably, I mean, I feel like it'd be almost easier to handle if at least one of them was doing something right, because then there'd be a chance that the other could look at them and be like, oh, maybe we should start doing that. But the problem is, in my opinion, both companies can't figure it out. And so both of them keep trying things that don't work. It would almost be better for one of them to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree with you. But yeah, I'm hoping the twice monthly issues come to a stop soon. I just think it would be better all around.
In my opinion, the best titles generally tend to be a consistent creative team. Even more recently, if you want to think really recent DC success, Scott Snyder's Batman run was him and Greg Capullo for almost all of it. There were, I think, very few issues that Capullo was not the artist on that. Even during Jeff Johns' Green Lantern run, there were multiple artists there, but there was long stretches with each artist that took it over. You know what I mean? There was not a lot of fill-in artists on that title.
Right.
So when you go twice monthly, you can't do that. A couple titles like Green Arrow and Wonder Woman found clever ways around that, but neither of them stuck with that plan. It's not a smart strategy. The only way you could do twice monthly is if it's like a case of like Batman White Knight, in which the book was already done and they didn't even do that twice monthly, but that was one that they in theory could have, because the guy had written and drawn it already. It was already done.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're going just like a normal, regular publishing thing, it's just not possible. It is not possible for a creative team to keep up with that.
And we saw that.
Even the writer couldn't keep up with it to a certain extent, which is, I mean, that tells you a lot right there.
Yep. All right, and for our last bit of DC news, now this is something I saw, but something Cletus saw. So tell us what our DC news is.
I mean, so take this with a grain of salt, because it has been about 3 years since it was announced, but I saw an article saying that the writer of the Booster Gold movie script has completed it, and that Greg Berlanti, who's in charge of that entire CW superhero universe, who is going to be, in theory, the director for it, has the script and likes it. And so now they're basically just waiting on the green light to get the movie started.
Sweet.
I'm really excited by that, because I hadn't heard any news for like 2 years or something like that. So the fact that suddenly news popped up about it was like, oh, it's still happening? I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I hope we get it.
Well, if Berlanti's behind it, I'm sure it's going to get made, especially if he likes it.
That's the thing. That's what when I initially had hope in it, was because when they hired Berlanti as the director, I was like, that dude's got a lot of sway at this point. If he wants to make something, I would imagine he's got the, you know, whatever, the sway, the money to do it. I think it's probably just a matter of getting Warner Brothers to agree to it, which I don't know why they wouldn't. If anything, Booster Gold fits their strategy more now than it did when they were in the Snyder era.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially after we just had Shazam, so.
Because you don't have to, because now with this movie, you don't have to figure out a way to tie in Booster Gold to the Henry Cavill Superman, right? I mean, that would be hard to do, I think, anyway, and now you don't have to.
Right, exactly. That's exciting news to hear, and I'm sure we won't hear any more about it for a little while.
Yeah, let's be real. Even if it is on track, they've done nothing in terms of casting. It's still just an initial script. So, I mean, as soon as we would see it would be in like 2 or 3 years anyway. So it's just one of those things. I saw it pop up and I was like, oh, if that pops up, that means it is still something. It's not completely dead, but we'll see.
All right. Well, that wraps up DC News for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Welcome to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster.
We are Venom.
I got my own parasite.
Parasite?
Sorry, Venom. I meant symbiote.
That's better. What do you do for fun around here?
I want to do a podcast with you.
What the hell is a podcast anyway?
Well, it's a weekly show where I talk about the latest news in sci-fi, movies, and TV.
You're such a nerd. Now I'm a loser on two planets.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 48. So this issue opens up with the gods restoring Aquaman's memories. We see a quick glimpse of Aquaman's origin in a one-page spread. Then he moves on to a place called the Sunken Forest where apparently his memories are. And he comes across this large shark that's guarding over them. I think the biggest shocker I got from this issue, Cletus, was when Aquaman asked that shark how his memories got there, and the shark answered that he had died. Because during that first run, I didn't have any indication that he was actually dead, did you? I just thought he was in some other dimension, place, magical land kind of thing.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I didn't assume that he was dead, but when he found out he was dead, I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Well, yeah, but I didn't. It kind of shocked me because I wasn't expecting it. We had so many issues of the other one without even knowing he was dead that to find out he was dead, I was like, oh. Apparently, Aquaman is supposed to pass through this shark to go to the world beyond. But when the old gods asked for a champion, the shark had sent Aquaman to them to test to see if he was a true hero. And apparently he passed the test. Now, when we get to the end of the issue, Aquaman sees a memory of a red-haired woman named Mira, who is also possessed of heroic spirit. Of course, we know who Mira is, but Aquaman learns that she is his champion, partner, lover, and killer. So I was like, oh, really? That's an interesting twist.
Yeah, I'm confused by that because we saw, I thought, how he died. I was pretty sure this just was following the whole drowned earth thing.
That's what I thought too. And then when we got to that and I saw that, I'm like, we rewriting the story or something? Or did something happen? Or is this like totally separate? It's got me curious.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a pretty good continuation of, you know, wrapping up the God storyline and moving Aquaman along to the next thing. So I'm really interested in finding out why Mira killed him for. I mean, they showed her in the previous story arc towards the beginning of the story, if I remember right, where she was like trying to find another suitor or something.
Do you think it's a flash forward and not necessarily a... That was one thing I wondered.
You mean if the whole story arc from last time is some flash forward?
No, her being his killer wasn't... I can see two things here. It's either they're really going back, because I believe in one continuity somewhat recently, Mira was originally sent to kill him. And then they, whatever happened, ultimately they ended up becoming lovers instead. So it's that, they're just, they like framed that as a cliffhanger, but it's really just the same basic status quo. They're just framing it this way. The other thing I'm wondering is if whatever shark thing is telling him that she will be his killer.
Oh, interesting.
And that in particular, that scene that we saw isn't something that has happened, but something that could or will happen.
That's interesting.
I could see either one.
That's interesting. The only thing that bothers me about that is this is supposed to be a memory. Of course, there is another suggestion. Maybe this is a memory of a different timeline too.
Well, I'm thinking it's probably more likely that it's a memory of... I'm pretty sure. I cannot remember if it was during Geoff Johns' run on it, during the New 52. I think it was that Mira was an assassin originally sent to kill Arthur. And I'm wondering if they're just going back to that.
That'll be interesting. Either way, I'm interested in finding out what's going on. I'm really liking the new creative team on Aquaman.
Yeah, it's been a very good book.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Batman number 71. All right, Cletus, before we get into this issue, I want to say for the record that I called it. Bane and Thomas Wayne go to Wayne Mansion to confront Bruce. Or at least Bruce thinks so. I think the big question from this issue, has Bane broken Bruce? And I think it's pretty clear to say that he has. We had two different storylines going on in this. One in which Bane and Thomas Wayne come to the manor to confront Bruce. And then we have the other storyline where Batman is rallying the Bat family. Batman goes to the Gotham PD rooftop, lights the bat signal red, gathers the Bat family in, and leads them to Arkham Asylum. And basically the Bat family finds out there's nothing going on there. Batgirl had checked the servers. No one has escaped from Arkham. Tim is trying to, you know, comfort Bruce, and he ends up punching him. So has this whole time, has Batman been going through this mental breakdown, and is all this stuff just in his head?
No, we know it's not, because it would be narrative cheating on King's part, because he's shown us scenes with Thomas and Bane that Batman was not present for.
Yes, that is true.
So you know what I mean? He could, in theory, be like, yeah, actually, it really is just all in Batman's head, but then that would be cheating. In some way, to me, that would be cheating, because you're showing us stuff that, like, that's basically just a lie.
Right. So, did Thomas Wayne actually go to Wayne Mansion the first time when somebody abducted Bruce? Or is that some sort of false memory and something else happened? Apparently, from the issue, from what I understood, they talked to Alfred, and Alfred never says he saw Thomas Wayne. Not saying that he couldn't have been there, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I have a good answer, man.
I know. This Tom King, you got us really intrigued.
Yes.
Because yeah. I'm wondering what the heck is going on. Is Batman having a mental breakdown? You know, did Thomas Wayne actually come and abduct him? Did he do it and Alfred just didn't see him? I'm pretty sure the stuff with the dining room table and stuff didn't happen. Where Bruce has the intruder alert and goes upstairs. I don't think that actually happened, do you? Because Alfred would have remembered that, I would think, unless they took his memories or something. Unless they're really manipulating things.
No, I thought that happened after the failed attempt on Arkham.
Oh, okay. It was hard to tell because the stories were going on at the same time.
Right. I interpreted it, and I could be wrong, but that was post-failed assault on Arkham.
And I took it as this was just Bruce coming back to the Batcave after escaping Arkham Asylum.
So I don't think so, because why would he... I thought... I don't know. I could be wrong. I interpreted it as he went... It failed. He came back and he's stewing in the cave because he's pissed off and he can't figure out what's going on. All of a sudden, Bane goes up there and he's like, "You son of a..."
Okay, I'm gonna bring up the issue real quick, because the thing that's confusing about that is him sitting there stewing happens first in the comic. I don't know. It's
yeah, but there's nothing that says that has to be what's happening first, though.
Yes, I realize that, but it's a little confusing. I'm flipping through right now. I think that's how the issue starts off, with him in the Batcave. Yeah, he's sitting there with his hand on his head, and an intruder alert. I mean, it could very possibly. Oh yeah, you are correct, because you flip to the next page. It says earlier, so that actually happened earlier. Okay. I was confused. So that happens that happens afterwards. Okay.
I will admit I didn't remember that part, but I was like, I knew as I was reading it that the Arkham thing happened first.
It did. Okay, that makes sense. Now I'm not as confused, and this totally makes sense. So Batman's not having a mental breakdown, but Bane is covering his tracks very well, because it keeps going back to the now and earlier stuff. Now that makes perfect sense. Now that we went back and looked at it. But, you know, King's run has been really good. And
I understand the complaints that some people have, but for me, it's been stellar. I definitely can't say that I have disliked much about his run.
I've really liked his run, too, so I don't have much to say bad about it either. So, and I'm looking forward to the City of Bane storyline, because it feels on par to something like Nightfall, you know what I mean? Which was one of my favorite Batman stories from back in the day. I'm very excited about it. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Justice League number 24. So the issue opens up, and we got Superman still trapped with no way to escape. We see the Legion of Doom helps the Justice League escape before Lois can rewrite their minds. Gorilla Grodd still hates the Flash. I found that hilarious.
One thing I had to say is that I was wrong in the last issue where we were talking about why would the Legion of Doom help, and I said because helping them furthers their goal, but it didn't fully click with me last issue that this was not the same Legion of Doom.
Oh yeah, because we got Darkseid there driving. All right, and we also see that Batman has agreed to work with the World Forger, and he has this new bat suit. And basically, the issue ends with the battle for the future continues. So, overall, a good issue. Not too much happened in it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good issue. I'm not biting, though. I feel like the issue really wants me to believe that Batman's going on a heel turn, but, like, I don't buy it.
Okay. I haven't really bought it either. I've been kind of, is Batman really helping him or not?
That was sort of the thing. That felt like the thing that was necessary to really, like if you bought that, that would be a pretty big issue. But if you don't, you're just sort of like, okay, what's going to happen next issue?
Yeah. They keep focusing on Superman escaping that trap. I'm expecting him to escape that trap.
I mean, yeah.
So, and apparently you are too. So,
I mean, what is he going to do? Not escape?
They've been
just there. Like, yeah. That's just the end of the. Like, come on.
So I'm thinking when Superman actually breaks out of there, that's when the big turn in the story is going to happen. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen with that. But this issue, but not a lot happens. The Legion of Doom helps the Justice League escape pretty much, and we see Batman working with the World Forger. Possibly, knowing Batman's got his own plan. So, that's what I suspect. And we'll see that come to fruition soon, I'm sure. Alright, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Naomi number 5. Okay, were you as disappointed as I was that Naomi didn't have anything to do with the Lanterns?
Yeah, I didn't get as much out of this comic as I would have liked. What I thought was odd was that it spent so much time world building this place, this other Earth that Naomi's from. But then the like lead in for the next issue suggests that it's ending, that arc is ending. Why would you spend so much time setting up a villain that's going to lose next issue?
I don't know if I got that from that or.
I mean, maybe he won't. I'd like to be wrong. I will admit, I definitely could be wrong, and I would like to be wrong about that. But I got the feeling that she was going to, like, the natural conclusion to this is that she learns how to use her powers and beats him.
That, I could see that happening, but I'm hoping that's not what happens. I'm hoping they're introducing this villain's going to be staying around for a while. Does it seem like she's a little overpowered?
I don't know. I didn't really, like, what does she do?
Yeah, I know they didn't really explain that, but they tried to make it seem like she had these, I don't know, her powers were like godlike powers or something.
Maybe. I mean, that was one of my complaints with this issue, was they spent like a lot of time talking, but not really almost any time actually discussing, you know, what the actual important information. I felt like there was a lot of extra stuff that if you cut away all the extra stuff, you didn't learn a ton. She's from an alternate Earth where 18 people got powers, and her parents were two of those powered people, and one of them was bad. And not, sorry, not one of her parents, one of the other 18 was bad.
Right.
That's it.
Actually there was more powered people than that, and some of them got killed, some of them left. And the thing I thought was really weird was their explanation. the Earth lost its protective ozone layer, the Earth should have been fried.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was also, like, I am all for environmentalism and green energy and all that, but that was very shoehorned in there. It was sort of like a, oh yeah, by the way, pollution's bad, kids. I was like, really? This story hasn't been, like, if you're gonna make your story about that, that's fine. I'm totally cool with that. But, like, you can't just throw that in there just like, oh yeah, by the way, also, don't destroy the ozone layer. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like it was like all of a sudden Bendis needed to throw in a personal view, which was like, I mean, I don't disagree with your view, but also, what?
I know. Plus the fact that if that really happened, the Earth would have been fried from the sun with no protective layer. I'm sorry, I couldn't get past that while I was reading this.
I read that too, and I was like, wow, that is extremely on the nose. Like, that is... It's one thing, like, if I were to read that line in, like, Wonder Twins, for example, I think it would stick out less, to be honest, because the Wonder Twins has a lot of stuff like that, where it's sort of making statements about the world and things like that. Like, it fits with the general narrative. This hasn't been about that at all.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. This is the tone in this one, when it doesn't really fit, does it?
But anyway, yeah, to go back to your question, does she seem overpowered? I would like to know. I assume that she will be. I honestly would be surprised if she's not. I'm kind of like, if you're trying to introduce this new character and really get her to stick, I mean, I have a hard time picturing Bendis using restraint. I'm just saying. I would be surprised if she was subdued as a hero.
Well, we know the villain's just as powered up as she is, but when she comes in contact with the rest of the DCU, I have a feeling she's going to be way overpowered. At least that's the feeling I got from this.
Well, and what I'm a little bit concerned about with that is that that's going to draw the ire of some people that might be inclined to dislike this character. You know, not everybody's a great person, you know what I mean? And some people are going to look at this character and not like it just based on who she is. And don't give fuel to those trolls, you know what I mean? Like, if you make her a Mary Sue, that gives legitimacy to the argument that she's a ridiculous character.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I mean, I get the other side of that. Don't worry about that crowd, because that's not the crowd you're writing for, but still.
So, this Zumbato obviously feels she's some sort of threat. Of course, he may come to our Earth and decide to, hey, I want to take this place over. You know what I mean?
That seemed to be the implication I got from the end of the issue. It seemed to be that he had... Well, that was the thing. So there was two really kind of ham-fisted environmentalism things. There was one, they burned through the ozone layer. And then two, the big villain used up all of the resources with no regard to anything. You know what I mean? Like, using them up at an unsustainable rate.
Right.
And so then it suggested, he's like, I found your Earth and just in time, suggesting that maybe he had dried the Earth up of resources. But, like, they never clarified, like, how or why or what he was doing with them. And you know what I mean? Like, it was just like, oh, he's using them.
I'm wondering, okay, too.
For what?
If the Earth he's from, if anybody has superpowers there, because it seemed to indicate that nobody had powers until this ozone thing happened.
That I got that impression too.
So, not only are you coming here to kill her and maybe possibly take over this Earth, you're going to have to deal with Earth superheroes as well.
And that's why I'm inclined to believe that he's going to lose next issue. It's because he wouldn't be coming. He wouldn't. Superman's going to show up in the next issue. There's no way Superman doesn't show up in the next issue.
We've already seen Superman once, so that makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I don't feel like I'm making a ridiculous guess. I'm really confident Superman's going to show up in the next issue, and I can't imagine that would be somebody that villain would be prepared to deal with.
Yeah.
And then we're both assuming, although the comic never clarifies it, that Naomi is also very powerful herself. I anticipate them just teaming up and kicking his ass, basically.
Yeah, I can see that happening. Now that you mention that, I can see that wrapping up next issue. And, of course, Bendis has stated Naomi's supposed to play this important role in the DCU. Maybe she's going to get involved with what's going on in the Justice League or something.
Yeah, I don't know. What I thought was odd and interesting was the way they framed it, because in the sort of tagline for the next issue, they're like, the first season of Naomi comes to an end. I was like, well, that's a weird way to phrase that.
The first season, huh?
Yeah, it felt very... I will admit, a lot of this comic has felt very TV-ish to me, and it was interesting the way they framed that, which is, again... When they used that wording, I was like, well, in that case, you have to view that as like a season finale, and the villain loses in the season finale.
Yeah. That's interesting. I don't remember seeing that. Now I'm more curious about what that means. That brings to mind, so is Naomi a miniseries? I thought it was an ongoing series.
I suspect that it's going to be similar to an Image series in that Bendis is going to write it, probably take a break for a bit, and then write it again, I assume. I could be wrong about that. I do not know. But I would not be shocked if it's like they did 6 issues, they wait a bit, then they do another 6.
I don't have a problem with that as long as it's good. Now that I'm looking back at it, it says to be concluded. And now that rings a bell. I meant to ask you if this was a miniseries, because I thought we announced it as an ongoing series, but we could be wrong.
I bet it is ongoing in the sense of like an Image style ongoing, which is that the title is still technically active, but is not putting out issues every single month.
Hey, if they want to wait and get it done before they stick out the next story arc, I have no problem with that.
I mean, I agree with you. I've made that argument countless times on this podcast. That's what DC should do. To me, personally, I feel like Image is the one that solved the Rubik's Cube of how to do comics in 2019. The way that they do them, they put those 6-issue arcs out. Some creative teams do more. Like, I think Walking Dead is pretty consistent in terms of the number of hiatuses that they take, I think is lower. But for the most part, a lot of them put out 6 issues, and then there's like a 6-month gap, or at least, and then they put another 6 out. And it's just, you're basically getting 1 to 2 trades, you know, every year, 2 years, which isn't, I mean, you're not getting the mega sales that you're getting from every issue, every month getting an issue out, but also the quality of those books is way higher.
Yep, I have no problem with that. If they want, that's the route they want to go. If they want to do that with some of these other titles too, they can do that. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Superman number 11. So this issue opens up with Rogol Zar seeking out General Zod because he wants to escape the Phantom Zone. Then we jump to the present, where we have Superman and Superboy have arrived at Jor-El's ship, only to discover it's under attack by several different alien species, also including Rogol Zar and Zod being there. We see Superman ends up battling Rogol Zar while John's dealing with Zod. And then when we get to the end of the issue, Supergirl and Krypto show up. Honestly, not a lot happened in this. And we didn't
It was weirdly a setup issue, and I was like, there's gotta be more you can do with 20 pages of a comic.
I know, because nothing really happened. A little bit of battling, but then Supergirl and Krypto show up. It's not even that good of a cliffhanger, honestly.
Well, then it tries to tie in some of the stuff that's going on with Supergirl, but in a way that it doesn't make sense. Like the diamond, whatever that diamond girl's name is, that's part one of the ships that's attacking, is, to our knowledge, the main villain of the Supergirl book right now. Why is she there?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it was like, what?
I'm several issues behind on Supergirl, so I don't even know what's going on in the title right now. So, yeah, overall, it was an underwhelming issue.
Underwhelming because it also felt like maybe it was going to actually get concluded next issue, and that felt underwhelming, too.
Yeah, because there's a lot of unanswered questions, and this battle thing was just kind of thrown in there. Because before we were focusing on John, I don't know.
Yeah, I've not been crazy about the last four or five issues of Superman.
But I agree with you. It feels like it's going to wrap up next issue. And maybe that's a good thing. Maybe we need to move on from the storyline.
But to what, though? My big problem is that Action Comics at least has some idea of what it's doing with the story that it's telling. Superman seems sort of aimless. I got what DC was doing, giving Bendis two books, and he could tell two different style of Superman stories, but I feel like inevitably the problem with this is kind of what we're seeing, is that you run out of ideas. You know what I mean? Like, you can come up with a bunch of ideas for Superman, but then if you're writing two books, you're going through those ideas twice as fast.
Yeah, and I have to admit that Action Comics has been a lot better than Superman title.
Because I think he knows what he's doing with that. And I mean, not that this still feels like a continuation of the original Superman story that he set up, but it's still like there's no inkling of where it's going after that. And also just kind of feels like a bit of a thud in terms of conclusion.
Yeah, because what the heck is he doing with this story? And part of the story has been told in Supergirl, and then that seems like they're stretching it out. I don't know. It is kind of confusing. We're going to have to see what happens in the next issue. And it feels like they're going to be wrapping it up in the next issue. All right, that completes our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our DC television shows.
Are you looking for a podcast that's a little bit out of the ordinary, a little bit crazy, and a little bit on the rambunctious side? Well, if I got something for you, it's called Vitamin Geek Podcast. My name's Corey Keelan. I'm the host and creator of Vitamin Geek Podcast, and I'm here to invite you to listen to my show. Each episode, I'm coming to you with whatever I think is important at the time. Maybe it's a new movie, maybe it's a comic book, maybe it's horror, maybe it's drag queens, who knows? I love to talk, and I'd just love to get you guys involved in the conversation. I invite you all to check out my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/vitamingeekpodcast. I would love to hear your feedback. So please join me and check us out here, Vitamin Geek Podcast, here on the ESO Network.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl Season 4, Episode 22, The Quest for Peace. When the episode opens up, we get to see the rest of Lex Luthor's plan unfold as we see Supergirl escape from Red Daughter, and then Red Daughter returns to Lex and commands her to go after Kara Danvers' family. We also find out that Lex Luthor has indeed put the president in power as his puppet. And we see the Kasdanians launch their attack, and Lex, using his Iron Man suit, because that's basically how they portray it, I thought, and stops the Kasdanians himself, making himself the hero. And then, of course, Red Daughter is surprised when she learns that Lex has betrayed her. And then later in the episode, we see Red Daughter save Supergirl and then get reabsorbed inside her. What was your opinion on this season finale?
I thought it was really good. I mean, I thought it was a pretty good conclusion to everything. I thought there was a couple things that felt rushed. I thought the ending of Red Daughter was a letdown, and I also thought the ending for Agent of Liberty was a little bit of a letdown, but not as much, because it seems like there's the potential to do more with him in a future season.
Okay, I got that. I got the opinion on that too. I'm glad they're keeping Ben Lockwood around to possibly come back as a villain, because he's such a great villain this season.
He was good, and I think this was sort of the downside. So, ultimately, Lex Luthor was the villain of this season, and the show just didn't tell us that for a long time. And so, when you view it from that lens, it makes sense that the conclusion is them defeating Lex. I have no problem with that. I feel like a lot of the issues stem from Warner Brothers' inexplicable stance on Lex. Why? You know what I mean? I just don't get it.
Yeah. Limiting him to 3 episodes?
To be completely honest with you, I really have to give a hand to the writers for this season, because what they were able to do with the main villain of the show only appearing in 3 episodes is astounding.
Yeah, they did a really great job with it.
That's I can't think of a much better case scenario for him being the logical villain and not seeming like he came out of the blue. You know what I mean? Like, they really wrote it in such a way that he really is. You do see he really was the villain the whole time. And it makes sense that they would be fighting at the end. And it's just the fact that they were able to fit all that into effectively 3 episodes is very impressive. I think the downside of that, though, is why we have sort of a lame ending with Red Daughter. That I felt was thrown in there. I felt like they didn't know what to do with her.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that.
I think one problem is, so because they could only do 3 episodes with Lex, they had to come up with other villains that could effectively be season villains on their own. And that's why you get Ben Lockwood, who we both agree was fantastic. And then you also get Red Daughter, who I think also could have been probably not a full season villain, maybe, but at least a half season villain. And she means in some ways she was, but again, you have 2 characters that would have arguably should have been the conclusion in their own right, and they both had to be relegated to the sideline. And they found a decent solution with Lockwood by having him in prison, but with Red Daughter, you can't just have another copy of Supergirl lingering out there. So I get the need to get rid of that character, but the result of that was pretty unsatisfying.
Yeah, it was disappointing. And they could have actually used Red Daughter in future stories too, and they just obviously chose not to. They just wanted to end her.
That's really hard to do right, though. I get why they wouldn't do that, because there's a better chance that any story you tell with that raises a lot of plot holes and questions like, what has she been doing this whole time? How has nobody not noticed there are 2 Supergirls flying around?
Yeah, that's true. And John Cryer did a great job of playing Lex. His ultimate goal was still to try to destroy Superman when he wasn't even on the planet.
The thing that I didn't like about this episode that I've mentioned a couple times throughout this season is, I don't know what the right word is that I'm looking for, but they were so, I feel like, I want to say like self-congratulatory on the power of journalism and writing. I mean, come on. The implication was that, what I thought was odd was they heavily, heavily imply that Kara Danvers' story is what wins the day, but you never actually see that. You see a lot of people reading it, but they never follow through on the fallout of that, which I thought was really odd. Because, like, they say at the end, she's like, can you believe the Fourth Estate is what saved the day? I'm like, but you saved the day. Like, you defeated Lex Luthor. That's what won. We never actually saw it. It was weird because I thought they were building up to, like, a revolt against Lex, and you never saw that.
Yeah, you never saw that.
He gets defeated in combat too quickly for the fallout of that to happen. So that I thought was odd. You never get the full fallout from that. But still, nonetheless, the implication that one story in a newspaper is going to change the opinion of a nation. I mean, what? What world are they living in? We have literally seen that not be the case in our own actual lives. Like,
Don't you know the pen is mightier than the sword?
I mean, but come on. I understand this show is by far the most political of all of the shows, and that's fine. But, like, good Lord. I mean, it was so on the nose and unrealistic. I my eyes were rolling so hard. Everything else about the episode, I was like, okay, I love what they've done with Lex, all of this, but with the journalism thing was just like, come on. I know you guys are writers and you're in love with the idea of writing being the thing, but like, it was ridiculous. That's all I can say.
Now, we have the White House scene with Lex, Lena, and their mother. Did you think it was odd, because it always seemed like their mother favored Lex, that she tried to poison him? Did that seem out of character for her?
Yes and no. It seemed in character that she would do something like that. It seemed out of character in that it didn't. What was he doing that she would want to poison him for?
Yeah. So,
he took over the nation and was going to kill Superman. Why would she be opposed to that?
I know. It didn't make much sense.
I can believe you a scenario in which she tries to poison her son. I absolutely believe that there's a scenario. That was not the scenario, though. I don't know if that makes sense.
That does make sense. I could see her doing it to further her own agenda, but she didn't really have an agenda here. All right. Let's talk about when Lex and Lena are together near the end of the episode, and Lena shoots Lex. But before he dies, he shows her a video proving that Kara Danvers is Supergirl. And then at the end of the episode, we get that scene where Lena breaks a picture of the Danvers sisters with her. I think this is the point where we're seeing Lena turn evil.
I agree. When we talked about this, we said if she doesn't break at the end of the season, she won't break.
Right.
But she did.
She did. So here it is. I think they've done a good job over the last few seasons coming to this point. And it sounds like she may be... I don't know if she's going to be the main villain next season because of what we're going to talk about next. But she's definitely going to be an antagonist next season. I can see it already.
I'm excited. I mean, they've set it up for so long. They played the long game with it, even more so than Smallville did.
Yeah. And not only that, she knows Supergirl's secret identity. So, I mean, she's even going to be a bigger threat. Because knowing that, you know, about everybody else in her life, like Alex, it's going to be a really interesting... Lena's going to make a really interesting villain, I think, even more so than Lex.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, because the best part in terms of advantage for her being a villain is that she's their friend.
Yeah.
And she can, and she's smart in terms of, like, you know, like they've shown, like the chess player, right?
Right.
She can be making moves while it's not even in the realm of possibility for them that she would be up to anything else.
Yeah, because she can continue to be their friend by doing things behind the scene. Ooh, we're going to get some good stories next season, I can just tell. All right. The other thing I want to talk about is we see Eve in a dark wig. Looks like she's trying to sneak out of town when she's stopped by this older woman who tells her that the work she did with Lex may have failed, but Eve is still needed. She tells her that Leviathan is everywhere. Leviathan is everyone, and Leviathan is coming. So it sounds like they're trying to tie this into Bendis' story.
I mean, this is now the second time that we've seen a really relatively recent... No, third time we've seen a Rebirth era story pop into one of the CW shows. We had the Ninth Circle, we had Godspeed, and now this. So they're clearly looking at a lot of currently running stories, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think it is interesting. And the fact that they're trying to bring it... It seems weird they're just trying to bring it into the television series already. We haven't even got the full story in the comic book yet.
I know. I haven't even really gotten into what Leviathan is doing in the comics. At least with Godspeed and the Ninth Circle, those stories were done.
Yeah.
They were very recent, but they were both done.
Exactly. And they're just getting started with this Leviathan story, so I was very surprised to see that in this episode.
The other thing, the big thing at the end, though, so all of these shows have had some level of Crisis on Infinite Earth teaser, with obviously Arrow being by far the largest. This one seems to suggest that Lex is going to come back for it, which is cool.
Yeah, because we see the Monitor show up at the end of the issue and basically collect his body. So I was very intrigued by that. If we get more John Cryer during Crisis on Infinite Earths next season, that's going to be awesome, I think. I like John Cryer as Lex.
I just like the idea of having Lex around. I have to say, the one thing I was like, I liked the scene, and I believed that Lena would pull the trigger. So I had no complaints about it, but at the same time, I was disappointed because I was like, oh, but like, I don't... Like, I like having the possibility of Lex being around. And so I was happy when I saw that scene because it kind of kept that alive a little bit.
Yep, sure did. Great conclusion to a great season. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Legends Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 16, Hey World. How are you supposed to beat fear itself? Wonder the Legends? The solution? They need to show humans that magical creatures aren't scary. And so they decide to use Mick's magical book to build Hey World and teach everyone that creatures are just misfits looking for their place on Earth. Oh man, what a ridiculous way to try to solve things.
And it was so stupid.
I know.
It was such a dumb plan, but it was the great thing about the Legends as a show is that, like, it didn't bother me. It's like, that makes sense that the Legends would do something like that.
But what's even more funny than that is Constantine tells them it's a stupid plan. Oh, man. I thought that was funny that, you know, Constantine pointed out another plan, and they're like, no, we can't have anybody else die. But I knew that's what was going to happen.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that the show didn't. I don't think the show tried all that hard to hide the fact that Constantine and Nate's plan was going to be the real plan.
Yeah. I got to say, with the Legends superhero trinity was hilarious. Sarah as Supergirl, Nate as Arrow, which he had the hood pulled down so far over his face, I don't know how he could see out. And then Gary just looked ridiculous as the Flash. So funny, though. While we had the ridiculous story going on, we had Constantine's story going on that was a lot more serious. And we saw fairy godmother Nora crash in hell. She's able to track down Constantine, freeze him from his torture. And then the two form a truce with Astra when they try to go recover Ray's soul. And we find out that their souls are like these little coin things. And when they get in there, we see Astra grab these extra tokens. We see names like Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Genghis Khan. And at the end of the episode, we see her, like, do a withdrawal of these spirits. I'm like, oh, I wonder if Astra is going to be the big villain next season. Well, that's the indication I got. Is that what you thought?
I don't know. Maybe.
Do you think
I think she will be connected. I'm not totally sold that she's the bad guy, though. Whatever that thing was that she made, I feel like is more likely the
villain.
Threat.
Okay. I was just curious. How funny was it when they actually find Ray's spirit in hell? He's playing Jenga with Vandal Savage.
That was hilarious. I did not see that cameo coming.
I did not either.
That was amazing.
What's funny was this, it's the same Vandal Savage, but he's like, his personality is like totally different.
He actually has a personality.
It was freaking hilarious.
I thought it was a great nod too to the, like, that first season. If you were to watch all of Legends of Tomorrow, that first season sticks out. You're like, well, it just doesn't mesh with the entirety of the show.
It does not. That's basically him saying, oops, our bad.
Yeah. Remember when we weren't like this?
Oh, man. What a great episode. Then we get that ridiculous ghost Hank and ghost Nate and then singing him back to life. It's just ridiculous.
I thought it was really ridiculous. I have to admit, though, I really liked the singing part was ridiculous, but the scene between Nate and his dad, I thought actually was really well done.
Yeah, that was cool. The other thing that we see happen was Zari had left the ship, so her time, you know, she wasn't protected from her time change, and we see, you know, after Nate returns his body, Zari, she kind of disappears, and I think she's replaced by her brother.
Yeah, that's what I gathered. Poor Nate. Can't catch a damn break.
Nope. Sure can. Sorry, Nate. You're probably going to have a new love interest next season.
I'm curious if that actress is done on the show. I haven't seen anything about it.
I haven't either, so I was wondering the exact same
thing. Or if part of next season is going to be them reconnecting with Zari. I don't know.
The search for Zari.
Well, but they wouldn't know. The thing is, none of them were in the time sphere, so as far as they're concerned, none of that she was never a member of the team.
Oh, that's true. I don't know. I don't know if she's going to be gone or not. I haven't heard anything. And the fact that it's not coming back till mid-season next year, we might not hear anything for a while. All right, I got to ask you, what was the point of the monitor showing up in Legends, except for to announce that, hey, Legends is going to be part of Crisis on Infinite Earths, because the monitor didn't really do anything except just stand in the audience.
I thought it was the show kind of poking fun at it, like, the monitor's appearing everything, but, like, we're the Legends of Tomorrow, so he's just here eating popcorn. I thought that was sort of the point, you know what I mean? Where it was like, yeah, we're part of the crossover, but like, come on.
Yeah, because he didn't really do anything besides eat popcorn, so. All right, I really enjoyed the season finale. It was funny. It was partially serious, but it was Legends. It was great. All right, well, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Doom Patrol, Season 1, Episode 15, Ezekiel Patrol. Following Mr. Nobody, forcing the chief to admit he caused Larry, Rita, and Cliff's accident, we flash forward 6 months, and nobody is really, truly happy. Larry and the negative spirit are working together, we see, trying to find out how long the spirit can be out of him before he passes out. We see Rita is making a go of being a high school drama teacher who basically is getting bullied by her students. Vic is a recluse. And Cliff only seems intent on looking after Jane, who has entered some sort of catatonic state. Mr. Nobody learns the satisfaction of winning as a bad guy, having broken down Niles. But he doesn't know what to do with himself after that and becomes a drunk. And I gotta say, I also found that toilet seat scene hilarious.
It was, just the meta thing with him reading the reviews of the finale.
Yes,
I could totally. The thing that was really funny about it was that that was a line that I could see somebody writing. It was just, yeah. I mean, God, what if just. I don't know about you, but I really was very satisfied with the ending of this. I thought it was – I think it would be easy for this show to kind of lose it in the finale of – despite the fact that all of the other episodes were good, one of the things about this show was that all these episodes were kind of all their own ridiculous adventure, and how do you wrap that up in an episode? But I thought they found the right way to do it. I actually was really impressed. I mean, you got these sort of endings with the characters that made sense, but then you also had a lot of the same ridiculous that has made the show so unique and funny. But then at the end of the show, gave it a really satisfying conclusion and also lead into the next season. I was impressed because if of all the episodes, I thought this would be the one that frankly would be the easiest to be underwhelming. And for me, it wasn't.
It wasn't for me either. Oh man, we had some funny things happen in this. You had the characters going inside a cockroach so they wouldn't be killed by radiation. You had the cockroach,
the cockroach making out with the rat.
I know. So ridiculous. Oh man.
How could he not see what was in front of him the whole time?
And then you had the beard tracker go to Mr. Nobody. Hey, wait a minute. If everybody went in the cockroach to be saved from the radiation, what about us? And then you get that big flash of white light. And then when they actually get back to the Doom Mansion, Negative Man comes out, and then they come out of the cockroach, and they're all like miniature versions of themselves. And they're like, guys, I think we got a problem here. So hilarious. Great ending to a great season.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just all the small jokes too. Like the reason Beard Hunter betrays the team is because he got the delicious beards of like Abe Lincoln. the, like you said, the party scene with Mr. Nobody celebrating his win and then slowly falling apart.
Yep.
Just all, I mean, it was just, yeah, it was, I, again, like I said, I know it sounds ridiculous because every episode has been good, but I really was impressed with how well this wrapped up a season that's been as bananas as it has.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so one of the big teases that we get for Season 2 of Doom Patrol is the Chief's daughter, Dorothy Spinner. I will admit, I did not remember that this was a character. However, I looked and was like, this, when he said Dorothy Spinner, I was like, that's got to be a character, because why else would they specifically drop her name? And also the fact that pretty sure his last name is not Spinner. So, Dorothy Spinner is a Doom Patrol character. Her first appearance was in Volume 2, Issue 14. And her powers, they don't really get into in this, but she basically has the ability to bring imaginary friends to life. Hmm. Which kind of jives with what we saw with, like, that weird jackalope god thing that we saw a couple times.
Yeah.
So, I feel like that's going to be something we're going to see with her, and I'm excited to see what they do with that character. They clearly haven't cast it yet, which is one reason why we only ever saw her arm and then the back of her head.
Right. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to the next season of Doom Patrol. Even though they haven't announced it being renewed yet, I'm pretty sure it will be.
They would be fools not to, is all I can say.
Yep. All right, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, coming up next week, we're going to have Action Comics, Detective Comics, or Dial H for Hero, Justice League Dark, The Terrifics, Wonder Woman, and of course, the premiere of Swamp Thing. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.